back in on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio and Josh Elliott Wolf doing post-game duty. Canucks beating the Buffalo Sabres 4-3 in overtime, thanks to a goal from Connor Garland. And that puts the road trip right now, the six-game roadie, up to 3-1, which by my terrible math, Josh, means that the Canucks will be, at the very least, 500 through the end of this road trip.
That's a success. That's a good road trip.
Given the injuries and everything else, I think you can live with that if you are the Vancouver Canucks. Also, Kevin Lankinen is 9-0-0, the first goalie to start 9-0-0 for his team on the road since I think Cam Talbot did it last year, and the other name was Glenn Hall. So, it doesn't happen often. Like Glenn Hall is ancient, pretty much. All right, so we'll get to more of this, more of your texts, but also Yannick Hansen's going to join us as he is our Friday analyst. First, I want to tell you this hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza.
Pizza time.
And Yannick Hansen is your Friday analyst, brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. Yannick, thanks for doing this. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Exciting afternoon game. Canucks build a lead, give it up, and then find a way to win it in overtime. And, you know, Connor Garland just continues to do it. A couple of goals and an assist. The big shot block turns out to be a primary assist for him. He's been one of the easily most valuable players for the Canucks this year.
He's been very good for a long time now. And again, key guys go down, and you're looking through the lineup who can step up and give even more. And you're kind of like, Garland, as long as he keeps doing what he's doing, like, don't want to ask for more. But he's been playing better ever since. Obviously, he's getting more ice time, more opportunities, and he looks like he doesn't want to give it back up again. He's producing in spades, and again, big day for him today.
As a fellow player, like, can you appreciate how crafty Garland has to be to play and have success at the size that he is?
I have been in awe with his skating since he arrived here in that trade a couple of years back. Anybody who wants to be a good skater should look at the way he uses his edges. There's not a lot of guys who can do that. And again, he is a smaller guy, lower gravity and all these things, but his skating is phenomenal. There's no question about that. He's got some tenacity to go with that, which I think make him so likable, because he is a small guy and he doesn't give an inch. He pushes back against bigger players, and that's what you like to see. You might not be the biggest, most intimidating guy, but don't get pushed around, and he certainly doesn't.
Yeah, we see the way he gets low to make sure he gets his puck on or his stick on pucks, and he might be one of the slipperiest guys in the league. It feels like whenever he gets lined up for a hit on the boards or whatever, he finds a way to wriggle away from it.
Smaller frame, and again, he's very quick, very crafty. So you kind of invite the guy in, and just as he's coming, you're spinning off of it, and he's obviously very good at that, which makes him a lot more elusive, and it's one of his traits. One of the things that makes him so good, because you look like he's pinned in or pinned down, and somehow he finds a way to get out of the corner with the puck against bigger, stronger players. And again, it's obviously one of the things that he's had to hone and become good at in order to be successful, because he doesn't have some of the other tools and trades that other players do. No, you need to play to your advantages, and you can see he does that in spades.
It was, it was an up and down performance from the Canucks overall. They get away with the 2 points. You're never going to complain about that, especially with how shorthanded they are. But how do you feel they've managed, you know, this game here and, you know, another injury blow with Filip Hronek one game in?
Yeah, I'll be completely honest. I didn't see the game. We were playing Hockey Helps the Homeless out at UBC, so I was playing myself. Yeah. But again, it's one of those times where right now infirmary is full. Just get results. I don't care how it happened. Play 500 hockey on this six-game road trip. Get back. See if we can get some of these players back in the lineup. But don't fall off. Don't go 1-5. And obviously, they gotten off to a good start. even though they were down in Pittsburgh, you could say they almost came back and made it and got something out of it. When you have this next man mentality up, when you have this many injuries, and it's not just injuries in the bottom of the lineup, it's very important guys that are sitting out now. Just get results anyway, anyhow, and survive this stretch. Every team will go through this. Granted, last year, Vancouver was somewhat lucky. They didn't get injuries on these key players as they're doing right now. But it happens. And you got to find a way to survive it. And so far, they have done it. And scratching and clawing points in Buffalo at when this game starts, 3 p.m. on a Friday, that's a good result. How it happened, that doesn't matter at this point. If they're full lineup and we're 10 games away from the playoffs, then, yeah, we'd like to see them play a more complete game. But right now, you're just trying to gather points, put yourself in a position where when push comes to shove and it turns into January, February, March, you're in a position where you're looking to add players, you're looking to optimize your team, if you will. But you need to do that now. You need to win enough games now. And you can't feel sorry for yourself. Yeah, you're without some very key players. But that's just the way the game works. You got to find a way, and so far they have.
Yeah, and I thought for a lot of the game, and through a lot of these injuries even over the last couple of weeks, maybe throw out the start of the Pittsburgh game and some of the other performances when they were back at home. But you know, with the injuries, since JT went out, they've really started to get back to their defensive identity. And it's almost as if the coach has you know, like it's almost like an ultimatum. Like, you guys want to have success, like the only way to do it is play well off the puck and play strong defensively.
Yeah, it's one of those things. When players go out of the lineup, skilled players, you're not going to win. You're not going to score a lot of goals and win. It will happen. And yeah, they put four on Pittsburgh. But again, you're better off winning these tight games. Play very sound defensively and hope that you get a couple of goals from the guys that are still left in the lineup, if you will. Because going out and expecting your power play to produce, expecting your middle six to produce, it gets a lot harder when your middle six is call-ups from Abbotsford and stuff like that. So it's always easier to defend. It's always easier to disrupt and destroy plays. So when you are thin in the lineup, you go back to defense because it is a little bit easier to control, making sure you're not giving up easy goals. I don't want to see two-on-ones. I don't want to see three-on-twos. Make other teams come through your whole team and earn these goals. And then when they do them, yeah, okay, then we line up in the middle and then we play again. But don't feed teams when your lineup is thin because it just becomes that much harder to get back into games.
So the Canucks are now 9-0 with Kevin Lankinen in net on the road. He's got 11 of the 12 Canucks wins on the year. And the other night we saw Artur Shilov struggle against the Penguins, and the coach made it known that Artie's struggling right now and he's got to find a way to battle through. But also, like, aside from the goalie performances themselves, it does feel like the team plays with a lot more confidence when Kevin Lankinen is in net.
It's because he's proven he can win them games. And I can go back several of these 11 games or however many he's won where like these pucks, these saves, they would have gone in on Shilovs and then you don't win these games. And that's why the confidence comes, because he knows when that puck comes, we need that stop. He's been making it for them. So team plays a little bit different when you have that confidence. And there's no quite, like, I don't want to get into too much GM armchairing here, but yeah, you probably need to get Shilovs back to the minors. You probably need to find another backup. And it doesn't matter where somebody goes on waivers or whatever it is. Get somebody else in to ride the pine pony behind Lankinen and get Shilovs to play some games in minor, because it doesn't work and it hasn't looked good now for just about any games he's played. And you will need that backup goalie. There's no question you have to ride Lankinen. But there will be these back-to-backs where you will need somebody else. So you probably need to go think about finding somebody else to play those, two, three games a month, if that, and then ride the other guy, because he has been phenomenal. There's no question about that. He's earned them wins. He's won games, and he's given them enough goaltending to win other games. And that's really all you want from your goaltender. Give us a chance to win, and then let's see what's happened.
Yeah, and hopefully Demko is back sooner rather than later. But you know, on the other part with Shelovs is he's allowed, he's allowed a goal on one of the first five shots of every game he has started this year. And as a player, I can only imagine like just how demoralizing that is. Where it's like you feel like this guy's a net, and you're going to be chasing the game, even if it is a big chance. Like sometimes the goalie just needs to make a big save for you.
Yeah, it's very deflating, and you're almost expecting it, which is the worst part, because you're already going out. You're already sitting like that mindset, and it's hard to change. And there's only one person who can change that. That's Shelovs himself. He needs to go out. He needs to make some saves. Be the goalie that earned him a call-up in the first place, and then mesmerized the entire Vancouver with the run he was on last year. Because he hasn't forgotten to play goalie, but his confidence is shattered right now. There's no question about that. And there is probably nothing worse than a goalie who's lacking confidence. As a player, you can hide. You can come up to the red line, dump the puck, finish your check, go to the front of the net when things aren't going well. But a goalie, you can't hide. Every single highlight, every single goal is going to be minuscule and broken down, and you did this wrong and that wrong, and team lost because of you. It's a very tough and very lonely position when things aren't going well for you.
Yannick Hansen, our guest. One of the other storylines that's continued here through the course of the season and continued on today, Nils Höglander, the low man as far as ice time goes, just over 6 minutes today against the Buffalo Sabres, had one shift in the third period, and he is about as in the doghouse as you can be with a head coach, where every mistake gets magnified, every little mistake might get magnified, and you know his name ends up in trade rumors again, Yannick. I think the only way that Höglander gets himself out of this doghouse and out of this cycle is to find a way to start playing better and make some little things happen for him when he is on the ice.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope. He's played his way out of the good grace, if you will, because he's a very likable player, and he's a player coaches like. You see the tenacity in Höglander. He's fast, he forechecks, he throws sneaky heavy hits, he's got some offensive skills, he has scored, but for some reason it's just not getting put together right now, and that's obviously hurting him. And he's, I don't know if you call it lucky, but he's lucky that there's this many guys missing in the lineup, because he'd be out. He'd be watching the games, which probably wouldn't be a bad thing for him. Because sometimes when you take a step away, take a step back, you get a fresh look on the game, you get to watch it from up high, and then you come back a little more hungrier, or not hungrier necessarily, but with a different view and a different outlook, and almost like a reset, because right now I've played so many games, I haven't scored, I haven't done anything. You get sad for a couple of games, you come back in, okay, this is my first game. Now the rest of the season kind of begins, but you can't do that when there aren't really that many next guys up before you start dipping into your fourth, fifth player down in Abbotsford. And I don't necessarily think that's the right choice either, but there's no question some time in the press box would not be a bad thing for him.
You know, he's just about to turn 24, and the name pops up again in rumors, and hey, we know the Canucks are in need of a defenseman right now, and I think that's probably, you know, from my perspective, would be a bad situation, is maybe trading a young player with a good track record of scoring at a decent clip. You've signed him now to a reasonable deal over the next 3 years. Not exactly the player I'd want to move for, let's say, a rental defenseman that might help you get through this period with Hronek out of the lineup.
No, there's no question. I don't know who you're getting. You're not getting somebody who's going to make a difference. You're going to get another Desharnais or another forward or that line, and that's not the player we're looking for. Like you say, a rental, stopgap, maybe. But again, 24, you're starting to become an older player. You've been around for a while now. You need to start figuring it out. You can only be young for so long, and he did get into the league at a young age, but he's been around for a while now, and you can start to expect more more from these type of players. But yeah, trading from a position of weakness is never good. And he does have a lot of qualities. And again, if he gets back to playing the way he did last year and that we've seen, then the deal is a great deal. And you do need these players in your lineup that can play up. Another example is Garland, who's obviously playing above his weight class. Another player you're kind of waiting for is Joshua as well. I know it's only been 7 or 8 games, but you're starting to wonder, okay, when is he going to start making his mark on the team as well? Because, again, they're thin, and he's one of those players that you really relied on last year, and you'd like to see him find his footing as well.
Yeah, I mean, for Besser and Joshua, like, again, we've seen flashes that continue today. Besser had a pretty strong game here against the Sabres, but it does take a while to get your feet under you after being out of the lineup for as long as Joshua was, and certainly for Besser as well. You know, this is game one of life without Filip Hronek. We saw the minutes get sort of divvied about. Quinn Hughes, though, played 28.5 minutes. I don't know if there's a way for the coaching staff to get around leaning on Quinn Hughes quite a bit while Hronek is out of the lineup.
No, can we get him for 35, please? good thing just happened when he's on the ice.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem tired at the end of the game. He's got young legs. There's no question about that. And he's in shape. And games where they are controlling, producing, minutes are a lot easier for the defensemen. If they get into these games against the better teams and you start going down, then you maybe start thinking about, because now he's going to get a lot of defensive zone minutes, and those aren't necessarily the minutes you want to be leaning on him. There's no question. You can't have him off the ice for very long because the offense is going to come from him, with him on the ice almost every time. So you need him out there. You need to protect him a little bit, but you need to play him. He needs to be next man up every time he comes back over the boards. Because, like I said, you need to hang in there. You need to scrape points.
Yeah.
And you're just that much better of a team when he's on the ice.
Final thing before we let you go. Canucks playing a 9:30 Pacific time game in Detroit. Did you like the matinee day games as a player or no?
Yeah, I did. I actually really, really enjoyed it. And obviously, we did not get a lot of them other than when we were on the East Coast. It's nice to get them in and then get to the next city. And kind of feel like you've almost earned a day. It's not 3 a.m. by the time you lay down on your pillow in your hotel. It's very nice to get them in. Extra rest, like it's a long road trip, and this will count like a rest day almost.
Yannick, we appreciate the time as always. Thanks for this.
Yeah, sounds good. Take care.
There is Yannick Hansen joining us here on Canucks Central, as he does every single Friday. You also hear him Tuesdays on the People's Show. Yannick, a fan of the early game on Sunday.
Surprising. I feel like most Canucks players would not be used to it.
Yeah.
And they're all like, all hockey players are all like, oh, routine, I'm a creature of habit. But Yannick's into it.
We do see some of the more crazy games happen, matinee day games usually.
Yeah.
Today's game was a really strange start time. Like, what, 3 o'clock local time in Buffalo? That's that's definitely
the
a
NHL
weird time.
Schedule was all weird today.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. Well, like Black
it's
Friday.
Black Friday.
But
so
I don't know.
Like, maybe you can go shopping and get trampled on, or just come to the hockey rink.
Or go to KeyBank Center.
All those crazy Canadians are gonna be filling up our malls, so you can just show up to KeyBank Center and watch the Sabres lose another hockey game, which is what happened today. Canucks go into the KeyBank Center in Buffalo and win 4-3 in overtime. A lot of reaction to the Nils Höglander discussion on our Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one from Tones. They need to find a way to get Hogs going with Besser and Miller once he's back. Being able to keep Suter with Garland and Joshua would be huge for lengthening the lineup. Tyler in Maple Ridge, when you don't get the ice time, you're not in the game and you're going to make mistakes. It's hard to capitalize on your 6 minutes of opportunity. Tockett, in my opinion, is in the wrong in this situation. Höglander was a big part of Tockett's Coach of the Year success last year. Höglander seeing a guy like Archdeep Baines coming in and out of the lineup and seeing more minutes and slotted right into power play 2 and sometimes line 1 has to be frustrating. He needs to set him up for success to get him going. I'm not sure. Like, I want to see Höglander get more rope here, but I also want to see him earn it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be disingenuous if I said I liked the way that Höglander's played recently.
I do think in the first period today, there was an element of like, okay, this seems like the Höglander that...
Getting the pucks first.
Yeah.
Forechecking well.
Yeah. Being annoying. Like, that's what you want to see from Nils Höglander. But again, in the second period, he made a mistake. And I also wonder if he's gotten to the point where he's so afraid of making a mistake because he knows what's going to happen, and then that's not a great place for your mindset to be if you're playing. So it's difficult. To Tones's point, I do wonder if when you get JT Miller back, is that an opportunity to kind of just like reset your lines a little bit and maybe give Höglander another shot, assuming he hasn't made a few more mistakes by then. The issue is, it does feel like every game there's a mistake or two from him, so it's like he hasn't earned it. You're right. It's hard to look at anything he's done and say he's earned an opportunity, but also he's been given so little time to potentially earn an opportunity that it's hard to go either way with it.
Höglander has not played. The last time he scored a goal... you got to go way back to October 19th. He played 15 minutes in that game. It was the 3-0 win over the Philadelphia Flyers, and he hasn't scored since then. He's played one game since then where he's gotten over 15 minutes, and that was shortly thereafter against the Penguins, that win at home they had over the Penguins. So 16 games, 2 assists. He's a -4 in that time. 12 penalty minutes, which is kind of surprising for Nils Höglander. So he's taken a few bad penalties, only 15 shots on goal. And in that time, he has averaged 11-17 of ice. So this is now an extended slump. He's taken bad penalties. He's been on the ice for a lot of goals against, as we've mentioned here on the show. He's got to work his way out of this. And sure, getting him more ice time is going to help. Hard for a guy, I agree with the point, like, yeah, hard for him to make an impact or get out of the doghouse when he's only playing 6 minutes and, what, he had one shift in the final 30 minutes of the game, basically?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
How are you supposed to get yourself out of the doghouse when that is your level of ice time? It's not an easy situation right now with Nils Höglander.
No, and it kind of feels like, you need to score in the first period, otherwise you're not going to play the rest of the game. And like that.
Well, and if we're in a close game, which we probably are going to be given our current situation as a team, you're not going to play in the third period.
Yeah. And that's why, in the third period, I kind of get why he wasn't playing, because he hasn't earned the defensive trust, especially from Rick Tocchet. If you're up 2 goals, I can see why you're not getting the ice time. Had they gone up 3, it would have been a question. I would have wondered if he would have played a little bit more. But that being said, I don't know. It comes down to, is the next road to trying to fix Nils Höglander, is it playing him with better line mates and trying to get him going that way? Or is it going the other way, which it seems to have been for a while, and hey, maybe he's out of the lineup for a game or two and Max Sasson stays in or Aturatu stays in? I don't know. Like, I don't know what the best solution here is, but all I know is right now it's not an untenable situation. It's just a very frustrating situation.
Of the young players, the AHL guys, Höglander's not really an AHL guy, but Höglander played and only had one shift in the third. Ratu only had one shift in the third. Actually, 2 shifts in the third. It was a very short one. Looks like he just went out to take a faceoff at some point in the third period later on. But the only guy of that group, Ratu, Höglander, and Sasson, the only guy that took a regular shift in the third period was Max Sasson, which is a little bit surprising. He ended up with 4 shifts in the third. Didn't have a ton of ice time in total, but I guess that would suggest the coach liked some of the details in Sasson's game. And I don't think it's wasn't really a surprise that the Canucks chose to send down Aristide Baines, given what we've seen early on here for Max Sasson.
Yeah, he's felt like... Like, to me, he's kind of felt like what they wanted from Archdeep Baines, and he's just been able to provide it. And maybe it's a ride the hot hand thing. Sasson, or like making his NHL debut, has a lot of confidence, adrenaline right now, has a couple points, like things are going his way. It might be a ride the hot hand, see how long this lasts, and then swap him with Archdeep Baines or whoever from Abbotsford, which I don't think is a bad strategy. But I've liked Sasson early. He's been fun.
We've got some messages coming in from Paul and Skip and some others. We're going to get to the final segment of the program. More on JT Miller and the rumor mill finding JT once again, maybe for the first time since, you know, that crazy trade deadline where he almost, or at least it felt like, he could have been on the move. We'll get to that next. You're listening to Canuck Central on Sportsnet 650. Back in on Canuck Central, final segment of the program. Dan Riccio and Josh Elliott-Wolf. As temperatures drop, sweaters are getting warmer, couch cuddles are getting cozier, and holiday movies are flooding our screens. Sounds like cuffing season. Or is it actually shipping season?
What?
Whether you're shipping a new romance or shipping a festive package, you can trust Canada's leading courier for quick, convenient delivery. Purolator's flat rate box starts as low as $15 for province-wide shipping and $20 for the rest of Canada. No matter what you're shipping this season, save up to 50% with Purolator. For details, visit purolator.com/sweet savings.
What a read.
It's great.
I love it.
Yeah.
Shipping season.
Get excited for it every time.
It's like that one commercial.
Yeah.
It's like, I just shipped my bag.
You know, I was actually getting a lotto ticket before the show today, and I noticed that this time of year, usually like the Canada Post, you know, person at the store is like always busy. There's like a lineup out the door. Mm-hmm. People are trying to get their mail out. Now, I mean, use Purolator.
Yeah.
Right? No Canada Post. I keep checking the mail, by the way. I don't know why.
Oh, dude. Every week, I'm like, hey, I got to check the mail. And then there is nothing. It's empty. And then I go, ah, you dummy, and I close it.
How am I supposed to know what's on sale at No Frills this week?
You know what? You won't even have to check the mail once you win $80 million, though.
That would be nice. Would be very, 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 very nice.
Would you come in on Monday if you won?
Probably not.
You wouldn't want to break down the Red Wings Canucks game?
If people found out I won $80 million, maybe the last place I'd want to be is like where everybody could easily identify where I am.
Easily Googleable address.
Yeah, it'd probably be the last place you want to be. All right, let's get back in on your text messages. 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. This one from Tone Capone. Does not look like a coach who's trying to get Hoglander going. It's not fair. Skip in the Ridge, on the flip side of it, blaming Tockett for Hoglander's game falling off is tired. He's a shell of what he was last year, and Tockett is 100% right to keep him off the ice. This is, honestly, this is a carbon copy of what happened with Andre Kuzmenko. Like, to a certain extent, it's almost exactly the same thing. Like, Tockett lived with some of Kuzmenko's issues because he just kept scoring goals even after Tockett took over from Bruce Boudreau. And remember, early on that first season with Kuzmenko, he got a healthy scratch even from Bruce Boudreau. Mm-hmm. Because when he wasn't scoring, guys were like, man, this guy, your defensive IQ is like hard to live with sometimes. We saw it with Daniel Sprong and with Nils Höglander last year. Like, he just kept scoring, so Tockett kept playing him. And overall, he really started to round out his game. He became a guy you couldn't take out of the lineup towards the end of the year. That changed in the playoffs. And that was some foreshadowing to this year where, hey, through the first 21 games, he's got two goals and he's shooting 8%, which actually isn't that bad considering he only has two goals, but it's more of like a league average percentage rather than the 20% he was shooting last year. This is exactly what happened with Kuzmenko.
Yeah, and maybe it should have been predicted, I guess, that this might happen this year. It's tough because when I look at Hoglander, it's the one thing I think about, like, there's this fear of trading him that, like, hey, he's going to go somewhere else and he's going to be amazing. And he's going to be the super underrated winger that every team wishes they had, and he's gonna be that guy. I just don't really see it. And so maybe, it's some people want to blame Tockett, some people want to blame Hoglander. It probably falls somewhere in the middle. He could be given more opportunity, but at the same time, like, is he going to do an insane amount with that opportunity? Like, I wonder what people think, and maybe text in 650-650, what his ultimate upside is. Because to me, it's like last year might have been the best case for what he can do in a season.
He's about to turn 24, so like he's just getting to his prime.
Yeah, but like, is there
more of a Garland level player in there?
I don't think so.
Like 20-ish goals, 50 points.
I mean,
ish.
Yeah, like to me, he's
all at 5-on-5. Like Garland hasn't been a power play guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the thing about Garland is like just the attitude to me is different. And I guess sometimes there are flashes of a Connor Garland game with Nils Hoglander. But I also don't know if it's consistent enough. And hey, maybe eventually he does find a way to make it consistent enough to be a Connor Garland type player. But to me, like that's not my concern if I were to move him, that he's going to turn into Connor Garland at some point.
You can keep getting in your comments about Nils Hoglander if you'd like. 650-650. This one and this text comes from Paul. Or maybe it's Glenn. Or maybe it's somebody using different names on the text box. Are we sure JT is returning soon? And that's still unknown, I will say. I know there have been reports that he might not return as soon as the Columbus game next Friday, Canucks' first game back at home, after their six-game road trip completes Tuesday in Minnesota. Rick Dhaliwal the other day on Canucks Talk did mention that he thinks and has heard Miller will be back for that Friday game against Columbus. So there's a couple of things happening there. Still seems like it's up in the air. We'll see what happens, but Dhaliwal was on Friday of next week being JT Miller's return. And we're hopeful that is possible for JT. Didn't stop JT's name from showing up in the rumor mill. Out of New York today, they mentioned Arthur Staple and others covering the New York Rangers, reporting that the Rangers, at the very least, inquired about the availability of JT Miller. Are you surprised, given everything that's happening here with Miller, that his name has shown up in the rumor mill?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. But it's also like they've been so, I guess, vague about it. And like, it's fair, it's justified that they've been vague about his absence. And maybe we'll know more when Miller comes back. Maybe we won't. But I think it is fair for a GM around the league to be like, hey, what's going on? Do they want to trade? And to call Patrick Alvin. And then it's also fair for Alvin to be like, no, we're good, thanks. And that could be what inquiring entails in this scenario. It is like it's going to pick up steam because it's a star player and their name is being mentioned in and around trade talks, even if it's not actual trade talks. But I don't know. I think it's fair, and I think if this leave of absence was happening for another player on a different team and the Canucks were interested in that player at one point, I think it would be fair if they were calling on them too.
I don't think the Canucks at this point in time have had any interest in moving on from JT Miller. You know, you think about guys that have set the culture, how important JT has been in resetting the culture of this team, I think it's pretty obvious how valuable he is to this team. So the only way that this happens is JT gets benched, JT goes on the leave of absence, other teams show interest and say, is he available?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what an inquiry might be. You know, when I play Football Manager, sometimes if I want a player, I'd like to inquire, are you willing to sell this player to me? And I might get a yeah, I might get a yes, I might get a no. That's kind of how it works in a video game world, at least. But in this situation, obviously, there's a couple of things that added up towards people wondering, could JT be available? And the Rangers, who've long had interest in JT Miller, going back to the last time he was in rumors when his no-move clause had yet to kick in, Canucks were in that tank season where they had already traded Bo Horvat, and teams started calling around the deadline about JT Miller's potential availability. The Rangers may have been one of those teams. And they even say in this report that the Rangers were after him at the 22 trade deadline, but wouldn't include Braden Schneider in a deal. Miller then signed a 7-year extension worth $8 million a year, pulling him off the market. So there was quite a bit around JT Miller and the Rangers and Chris Drury in the past. So I'm not surprised that they would still have interest, a team very much searching for its identity right now. What have they lost, 5 in a row now since beating the Vancouver Canucks?
Lost again today.
There's a lot going on with the Rangers. They're talking about trading Trouba. They're talking about trading Chris Kreider. So there's a lot here. Doesn't mean that the Canucks are willing to seriously engage on talks for JT Miller, but they can't stop teams from calling about the potential availability of JT Miller. And you know, it's really hard to evaluate where things are at with JT, because ultimately what really matters right now is JT getting healthy, whatever that version of health is for JT, mm-hmm. and getting back into the lineup eventually. But as Patrick Alvin said last week, the most important thing is JT seeking out help and him getting healthy, and he has the full support of the organization. So that's where, and I don't think it's, I don't think you should get too far down the road of like, hey, JT Miller could possibly be traded anytime soon.
No, and it just doesn't make sense from a hockey standpoint too. Like the Canucks need centers. Mm-hmm. You trade JT Miller and you're losing a key piece of your team in a key position where you don't really have depth. You don't really have prospects coming down the center position. It just for the Canucks, it wouldn't make too much sense unless you're getting a center back too. But it just doesn't. It's weird. It'd be a weird fit, and that's why I don't even think we need to go too far down this road. Aside from all the off ice stuff, like the personal leave and all of that, on top of it, it's just like Would New York be willing to overpay enough to make the Canucks consider it?
Probably not. No.
Like it would have to be like Keandre Miller plus. and then they're probably like, no, why are we even doing this?
Yeah. I mean, look, if you start throwing Keandre Miller on the board, maybe I get a little bit interested, but it's still a really tricky sort of situation. You know, they even mentioned Mika Zibanejad. Could it be a one-for-one kind of swap, given that the money works on both ends? And look, Zibanejad not having a terrible year, but also looks like a player that's going through it a bit himself right now. So I'm not sure you'd be too interested in that sort of a thing. I think there's a lot that's going on around the league right now, though. Like there's a lot of teams that aren't happy with the way that they've started this season. There's a lot of teams seeing that their cap flexibility has maybe opened up, not so much this year, but they can take on term for next year, given how much of a jump there could be in the cap going forward. Like think about how the flat cap has worked the last few years, Josh. It's like, not only am I like really struggling to fit money in for this year, I also know I have very limited space to work with next year. So taking on term is also tricky. Whereas now that changes a little bit with the cap potentially going up above $95 million next season.
It feels like this is the year where things are going to get like weirdly wacky for...
Let's hope so. That would be fun. I like chaos. Chaos is good.
I would welcome it. But yeah, ahead of the deadline and into the summer, it just feels like you're probably going to see some silly contracts, maybe some trades that we would like, especially referring to the flat cap, like we haven't seen in recent years. And that's exciting. I wonder, like when I look at GMs, there's always some that figure out a way to kind of make the best of a situation like this. And I wonder what that's going to look like for teams in this evolving cap world. And I mean, hopefully Patrick Alvin is someone that figures it out rather quickly, but is it going to be like, hey, finding guys that have term already that maybe teams are down on that you can bet on? I don't know what it's going to be, but it's adding a fun wrinkle for sure.
This text, Dan Hronik on LTIR opens up $7 million. I mean, sure, it does, but like what happens when Hronik comes back into the lineup?
if you knew he was into the playoffs.
Yeah. If you knew he was going to be out for the majority of the rest of the season, then sure, but that has yet to be determined. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. What'd you think of the Canucks defense today without Hronik?
It was better.
It's not a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, it was par.
That is not a ringing endorsement.
It was better than I thought it was going to be. But
Myers was pretty good.
Soucy was, I thought he had his best game in a while.
Soucy's game, it feels like Soucy's game is starting to turn around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Brännström struggling with the extra responsibility a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like I was a big proponent of, hey, let's get Brännström more minutes. And yeah. Now I kind of regret it.
I mean, look, it's going to be a process. There's going to be some ups and downs if you're going to play him a little bit more. 17 minutes tonight, ends up with a dash two. Did have four blocks, so was actually good on that front. But the bigger question, it ultimately comes down to Juulsen and Desharnais. And honestly, like Desharnais and Juulsen, it's more about their puck moving than it is anything else, because there's moments where Desharnais makes really good plays defensively. I thought he, like a couple of times, he gets put in a one-on-one situation, defends really well, boxed out pretty well today for the Vancouver Canucks, but like tries to make a simple pass and gets himself into trouble.
Yeah.
Noah Juulsen, double clutching on pucks, trying to move out of the zone. You know, those are the things that have crushed these guys early this season, is just a lack of ability to make the easy play even at times out of their own end.
I do think that's going to happen too, though, with like six defensemen. Like, you're never going to find a perfect, just safe option.
Yeah.
You're always going to have some drawback to a sixth defenseman, unless you like really stack your defense like your Vegas or whatever.
And the other issue is like Buffalo. And hey, Buffalo's a quicker, younger team. They can really press you a little bit, but we saw how much they wanted to close down the Canucks when they didn't have Quinn Hughes on the ice.
Yeah, and that's probably going to be a trend that we see moving forward. Yeah, I also wonder, like Buffalo, yes, they have offense, they're a younger team, they're a quicker team. I do wonder how it's going to look when they're playing against like even Minnesota in a few days, like how the defense is going to hold up against teams that are maybe a bit more of a serious threat. But I kind of have that thought about the team as a whole anyway. So it's like the team right now. It's just like survive until Hronik is back, mm-hmm. essentially, and hope that you can get some wins, get some points until then.
I'm very excited for this weekend, Josh. I haven't been to a wrestling event in a very long time. Mm-hmm. I actually went to a house show here in Vancouver a while ago. But tomorrow I'm going to Survivor Series War Games. We talked about it on the show. I know Arash is going
Arash
as well.
Arash is going.
He's hyped up. Elon, who is the proposed winner of the 650 Royal Rumble, not going, but would still win the Royal Rumble. Have we convinced you that Survivor Series War Games is something you want to go to?
It's like, it sounds fun and I want to go. And I was looking at tickets before I messaged my wife. I was like, hey, do we have plans tomorrow?
You didn't.
Got to check with the wife.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I got the whole ball and chain. No, but and then she was like, "Well, I have plans. Like, I'm going to my friend's house."
Oh, so, and you, so like your night is free.
I'm free. And then I reached out to a couple of my friends, and they are tied up.
Oh,
so we'll see. I'm gonna have to make some calls, work the phones. I would like to go. I would like to go because it sounds fun. Like,
there's a steel cage involved.
I know.
The Rock is going to be there, likely.
Two rings put together and a cage. What more could you want?
I just love that. Like, I know Sat's going, Reach is going, and I'm just peer pressuring Josh to go.
Yeah. It's really just FOMO, I think.
Yeah.
I feel like something really cool is going to happen tomorrow and I'm going to miss it. And then I'm going to come in on Monday and be like, oh, I should have gone.
You've got a chance to see somebody fly through the air and through a table off a steel cage. Like, how often do you get to see that in real life?
Rarely.
I can't wait for tomorrow after the show. It's like everyone's going to be bummed out The Rock wasn't there.
Yeah.
And in the post-game interview, they'll be like, yeah, I was going to show up, and then I heard Josh didn't show up.
Yeah.
And I just thought, what's the point?
I phoned it in. It didn't feel necessary. What is... But I got two questions.
Okay.
What does Survivor Series mean, and what does War Games mean?
Survivor Series is just what the pay-per-view has been called forever.
Yes.
Basically.
All right.
And it's one of the big four or five events that of the pay-per-views that are monthly, it's one of the big five events of the year.
Yes.
War Games is just like the steel cage match with the two rings put together.
So this is like a big event too.
It's a huge event.
Yeah. So it's it's WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. Yeah.
Really? So this is like, I've heard of all the first three things and we got the fourth one.
Yes.
That's nuts.
And we haven't sold it out yet.
Yeah.
Oh, ooh.
Survivor Series is where the Montreal Screwjob happened.
Oh, I've heard of that. Don't know what it is, but I've heard of that.
Come on, hand in your Canadian citizenship right now.
I'm sorry.
All right, it's Dan Riccio, Josh Elliott Wolf. Shouts to producers Elon and Rash.
Josh Elliott, what?
Wolf.
That is what a wolf does. I don't know. I guess it's fine.
A little slip of the tongue. Josh Elliott Wolf and myself, Dan Riccio. You've been listening to Canuck Central.